Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
Your future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Who with it now?
That'll go on a second. Fielded by Dubon, gets it to Kessinger. Yes!
That courtesy of whoever the hell shows Angels TV games, I don't care at this point. I mean, with that, down go the Astros. Just spare me with that. That an ugly loss last night for your Houston Astros, 13-12. 13-12 in extra innings. This is the bullpen with the producers here of ESPN Radio. Myself, Brian McDonald, found on Twitter at Sack by BMAC. To my left, RJ Saunders at R has no J on Twitter. Sean Bates. Not here. He's on vacation.
Yes.
And look, people might have heard this by now. I don't know for sure. Maybe we're breaking news to a few listeners. But RJ, this is your last show with us here. And Sean's not here.
Last show. Sean, I thought we were going to have like this celebratory thing.
I know.
Nope.
You're headed back to Jacksonville. Yeah. I don't know if you want to take a second and tell the folks who have heard you for the last couple of years what you'll be doing. But headed back to Jacksonville, and Sean's not here to say goodbye.
Sean's not here to say. He did say that, like, we'll say our goodbyes next week. But, going back to Jack's opportunity over there. But, you know, it's definitely been hitting me like the last couple of days. So it has been rough. It has been hard. So I really haven't said anything like to anybody. But yeah, I think next week is going to be absolutely difficult, man.
Well, when the Texans play the Jaguars this year, we'll make sure we have you on and talk a lot of crap after. Obviously, the Texans kill the Jaguars. That's
all
obviously the result that will happen.
All the time.
So, but let's get into the Houston Astros. Oh, and just one quick note on the bullpen. The bullpen's not going anywhere.
Nope.
Going forward, the Sunday show will still be Sean and myself, and Andrew Carlson will be joining us. And then the Saturday show will be Joe George, and Dell is returning.
Okay.
Will be on the Saturday show
really
with Joe George. But let's get into the Astros. Kind of the good and the bad from these first two games after the All-Star break against the LA Angels. The good, I mean, a team without Jose Altuve and Yordan Alvarez in the lineup has scored 7 on Friday, 12 last night. So 19 runs in 2 games for a team without Yordan and Altuve, you know, they're 2 best hitters in the lineup. I mean, Kyle Tucker may have an argument. And that includes 4 runs off of Ohtani in only 5 innings of work. So that's 3 starts in a row they've beat up on Ohtani. So I mean, if one of the question marks over the second half is, can this offense hit? I mean, pretty good sign, at least in regards to that, right?
Absolutely, and that's what you're definitely going to need, especially with your key guys out. As far as you waiting for them to still matriculate and make their way back, guys like Yordan, guys like Elton.
Matriculate, I love that.
Hey,
a little NFL clubs there.
Trying to be like Sean a little bit. Sean's always the wordsmith of the group sitting in this chair. But I mean, until you're waiting for those guys to come back, I mean, you know, Dusty has spoken about it. There has to be this next man up mentality, but he's also kind of expressed that he feels like they're starting to run out of next man up. To be able to do what you did on Friday, I mean, that's something that you really have to enjoy, because you're saying you did all this against Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, it's not like, you know, Ohtani went, you know, whatever he went, and then all this was off the bullpen. Like,
you got
4 runs and 5 innings off Ohtani.
Especially with a guy that you're saying is probably going to be outright maybe the MVP this year.
Oh, yeah, without doubt. Unless he gets traded, then it opens it up. If he moves over to the NL, then who knows what the American League MVP.
Who knows what happens. So, I mean, you know, for you to do that against undoubtedly the, you know, the MVP, and you don't have your key guys with you, I mean, and for that to be how you start off the second half of the regular season, I mean, you were definitely pleased as an Astros fan to be doing that.
Absolutely. And one of the guys hitting well is someone we've talked about a lot on this show, that's been talked a lot about on the Monday through Friday shows. Basically, I'm sure talked about a lot on the other two stations here in town, and that's Jose Abreu, because you know, obviously for all of April and May, most of June, he was awful. And these first two games after the All-Star break, Abreu's been hitting pretty well. I mean, yeah. Two-game sample size, obviously very, very small, but had three hits and a walk on Friday, then had two more hits last night, including a three-run home run. I mean, we just mentioned they scored 19 runs without Jose Altuve, Yordan Alvarez. Yep. I mean, if Abreu can be – now, and I'm not expecting him to have five hits every two games.
No.
But if Abreu can be a pretty consistent force, at least to what we saw from him last year with the White Sox, and then you add Yordan and Altuve to this, all of a sudden this offense becomes pretty dangerous.
Yeah, I mean – listen, okay, so Jose Espada, what was this, in May?
Yeah, you say he was going to carry the team.
He was going to carry the team. That, you know, that was something that he had spoken on. And then
carried the offense the last 2 days.
You've heard guys on Twitter, you know, every time, you know, Jose Abreu has a good game, apologize to Jeff Bagwell, apologize this instant. This is what you were looking for. You know, yeah, I think a lot of people absolutely were ready to write Jose Abreu off.
Me included,
being one of them. So there goes two of us. I mean, you know, we're ready to write this guy off, saying he's over the hill, kind of, you know, past his prime. You know, this is a guy that we're getting that's now on borrowed time, borrowed wings, and we thought that this was going to be the first baseman that we needed. Why did you let go of Yuli? Why did you let go of him? We should have just kept Yuli. You know, but now you're seeing him pay dividends. And that, I mean, that's definitely a good sign for a guy that I think at the first half of the year, at least for a lot of Houston Astros fans, he didn't have a lot of guys in his camp as far as the Astros faithful. So for him to be doing this right now, hopefully he can sustain it, because you're definitely going to want this during the playoff run.
Yeah, I mean, and the home run he hit last night, it wasn't like it was a fastball right over the heart of the plate. It wasn't a slider that was left up. I mean, he went down and got it and drove it out of the ballpark. So, I mean, if this offense, you know, if you get this from Jose Abreu, Kyle Tucker keeps doing Kyle Tucker things, you add Yordan and Jose Altuve to the mix, then it almost doesn't matter to what we're going to get to next. Jeremy Pena, it doesn't matter if Jeremy Pena is one of the worst offensive players in all of baseball. And we'll start there with the bad from these first two games. Jeremy Pena went 0 for 4 on Friday, 1 for 6 last night on Saturday. And that's not even the worst of it. Since June 1st, he's hitting .224 with a sub .300 on base, which is just absurd.
Yeah.
And a sub .600 OPS. Okay, now we get to the really bad stuff. If that wasn't bad enough, RJ, on the season, Pena ranks 136th out of 152 qualified hitters for on base percentage, 129th out of 152 for OPS. And for the stat win probability added for an offensive player, basically offensive war,
yeah,
Pena ranks, are you ready for this, RJ? He ranks 572nd out of 575 players.
Damn.
At -2.4. Him at the plate, just his at-bats at the plate has cost you 2.5 games. And, oh, what do you trail the Rangers by? 3. Pena's bat can almost single-handedly be pointed to why you're trailing the Rangers right now.
I'll ask this. Do you think that it's a positioning thing almost? Because, I mean, you know,
you mean like where he hits in the lineup?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would have said that before last night, because the historical data has shown that he hit way better as the second hitter.
The second guy.
But then he was in this two-hole last night, and he went 1 for 6.
And hurt himself, too.
Yeah, so it's like...
So there goes extra bad. Double whammy.
It's just like last night, you know, 2 and 3, Pena and Bregman. I mean, we're not even going to get into Bregman right now, but he's been atrocious as well. It makes me start to wonder, look, obviously Pena was, I mean, understatement of the century, amazing in the postseason last year. He was the ALCS MVP, World Series MVP. He's hitting over .300. He's driving in key runs. He was the guy that got on base in front of Yordan Alvarez when he hit the walk-off homer against Seattle in game one of the ALDS. So, I mean, his heroics in the postseason last year can't be, you know, understated. But I'm starting to think maybe that was the outlier. Maybe that was a fluke. And, like, what were – because, I mean, I think Jeremy pointed this out on Friday on the Killer Bees. Like, what Pena's doing in the regular season right now is pretty similar to what he did last regular season. It's not drastically far off.
No.
Then he, you know, took the world over in the postseason.
Yeah.
Is this Jeremy Pena what we saw maybe last? Should we start to come to the reality and come to grips with maybe the real Jeremy Peña is what we're seeing in the regular season, not what we saw in last year's postseason.
I think, I mean, you can also, I think we talked about it last week or 2 weeks ago, even with Rafael Montero, had a great postseason, but you paid him basically off of one postseason, and now, you know, it's not paying the dividends, at least that you would like to see so far this season with Rafael. I think that you have the same, you could almost have the same argument, although you haven't paid him yet, I believe that you are.
Yeah, you got a few years before you have to have that conversation.
But I think Jeremy Peña, I think because of what we saw, we're thinking that, and it still may come to pass, but, you know, I think that we thought that here's the next superstar of the Houston Astros.
Yeah.
And here's the next guy, and, you know, he's doing everything out there on the field, MVP in both the ALCS
and World Series.
And World Series. So next year he's going to come in and, listen, I mean, you know, this is going to be our guy.
Yeah,
I mean,
he's going to be Carlos Correa. He's going to make us say Carlos Correa who?
Exactly. But you
and
know,
maybe he still puts it together in the postseason.
Maybe he does.
Maybe
yeah,
he's one
maybe
of those guys that just doesn't perform in the regular season. And yeah. Once it gets cold, maybe Jeremy Peña just likes to play in the cold. Once it gets to October, November, then he's going to start
to
play well.
Down a little
yeah,
bit.
Look, I mowed the lawn yesterday at my palatial estate in Kingwood, and I nearly died, so I get it. I don't want to play out in the heat too quickly. Before we go to break, one more bad. Brian Abreu, someone else who was just absolutely an insane superstar in the postseason last year, I believe gave up zero runs in the postseason, maybe one run. But since he got his ERA down to an absurd 1.14 on May 24th, since May 24th, Abreu has a 4.79 ERA and allowed hitters an 8.55 OPS, which is an all-star caliber OPS,
yes,
over his last 22 appearances. You know, I'm starting to wonder, we talked about like before, like, oh, you know, JP France is actually pitching pretty well. Right. Bielak and Blanco have had their moments. But I'm wondering if the injuries to the starting rotation and that causing the Astros to have to lean on their bullpen even more. If we're starting to see the side effect of that with maybe Brian Abreu just being fatigued, he's had to pitch a lot.
No, there's been a whole lot of guys that have had to pitch a lot. I mean, him.
Phil Maton. Also starting to fall apart.
Also, he's had to as well. I mean, so there's a lot of guys that you just are, you know. I think with this trade deadline now, I don't know. I mean, you know, at first it was you want to get like another starting caliber pitcher or need a left-handed at bat, you may have to look at a guy that you can put in the bullpen as well.
Oh, I definitely think you do.
You know,
yeah.
So I think the Astros may have just a little bit more than what they may have thought, where, you know, the talk is, you know, left-handed hitter, and then we need to get like another starting caliber guy, probably be that number four
Or four starter, yeah.
You know, because you're going to have Urquidy back, so, you know, probably have like that guy there. But bullpen, I mean,
The good news, though, is at least with bullpen, and we didn't have time to get to it, but Tim Kirchner was on the Killer Bees on Friday and talked about how difficult it's going to be to acquire a starting pitcher or a quality bat because of the extra wild card spot. There's so many mediocre teams that think, hey, we're still in it.
Yeah.
We're not sellers, we're buyers. So the market is going to be so difficult to manage for hitters or starting pitchers because of all the teams involved. But I think relief pitcher might be a little bit easier to get just because there's more to go around. All right, coming up next in the bullpen, Sean is out. RJ and I are huge wrestling fans. And guess what? Damn it. On RJ's last show, we're talking wrestling. Back-to-back segments. Next up, well, let me set the table with what's coming on next, and I'll tell you who's coming on right now. 10:30, my buddy Kyle King, who I did 3 years of a wrestling podcast with. He's a morning show host out in Tennessee. He will join us at 10:30. But coming up next, someone you can hear on these airwaves Tuesday through Friday, Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame with Booker T and the voice of reality wrestling. He joins us next in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 on Twitch. I don't get it.
There are things in this world that we will never fully understand.
Whatever they call you, I'm coming after you, you coward. I dig it in. Overplayed, you set it off.
He's
set it off.
Used to be hard. From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here
here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
I had to use this music for Brad Gilmore because, like myself, I knew he is a big fan of the bars being dropped by Macho Man Randy Savage on an album that came out way back in 2003. Fun note, RJ had never heard this before. He didn't know it existed until I said, hey, we're having Brad Gilmore on. I'm going to play some Macho Man rap. And he looked at me like with a quizzical look like, Macho Man has a rap CD?
Yes.
And then he heard this song and his life was changed forever.
I thought Cena was supposed to be the guy.
Joining us on the HR&B listener line, it's Brad Gilmore. You can find him on Twitter, at Brad Gilmore. The host of one half of the Hall of Fame here on ESPN Radio, along with the six-time world champion Booker T, and of course the voice of reality of wrestling, Brad Gilmore. Welcome on to the bullpen. How you doing, my man?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Thanks for having me. I love hearing the Macho Man sweet, sweet voice this early in the morning.
Nothing gets the juices flowing more than hearing Macho Man spit some bars. Now, you had Booker T review what he thought of Macho Man's rap ability. What grade did Booker T give Macho Man on this rap?
You know what? I'll be honest with you. Booker ranked him pretty high. He enjoyed hearing the Mach lay it down on the Be a Man album. And I will say, I know that it's not a great rap album, but for some reason, I can listen to the Macho Man spit bars about his perfect friend, taking on Hulk Hogan, about, you know, remember me, a six-time champion. I can listen to the Macho Man all day long do it. So Booker and I think we enjoyed it. We both rank it pretty high.
I got to say, Brad, that was actually a pretty good Macho Man impression there.
Really good.
Yeah, that album, it's one of those things I started off liking it ironically, and I think I just actually like it now, especially the song, I can't remember the track name, but where he talks about going into the club and picking up women. It's just, it's
a macho thing.
Yes,
man.
It's a macho thing.
And that's Fang, T-H-A-N-G.
Yes, of course. I mean, how else would you spell it? Macho Man's not going to spell it regular. All right, let's get into some wrestling. Brad Gilmore again, the voice of reality wrestling and one half of the Hall of Fame with Booker T, which you hear Tuesday through Friday here on ESPN Radio 97.5 at 9 o'clock. Brad, Fightful Report says Warner Brothers Discovery wants AEW to expand their pay-per-view schedule, possibly to where they're running one show per month. Nothing is finalized. But this could be include pay-per-views being added to the Max streaming service. I don't know how you feel about this. I felt WWE has gone too far with the monthly pay-per-views. Hell, there was a time where they're doing like 15 pay-per-views a year. I know they're never going back because they're never turning down the money that they're getting from it. But as strictly from a fan point of view, the product being served, whether or not you could tell good storylines when you're being forced to do monthly pay-per-views, is AEW going from four pay-per-views to possibly 12 a good thing for the fans and a good thing for the product?
I would say no, only because I think you need to crawl before you walk. AEW's done a really good job of establishing those big four shows and making them feel special. I think that in trying to do that on a monthly basis, it's going to be really difficult for any company to go from four to 12. If they want to slowly say, oh, we're going to do now five, we're going to get to six, and see what the market looks like on that, I get that Warner Brothers Discovery wants it. Sure, they can make more revenue from this product that they've invested a lot of money in. However, they might wake up to a very, you know, massive market correction if they go out there and they test it with 12 pay-per-views and people just aren't buying them. Because, like with anything, when there's more supply, there's going to be less demand. And I don't know if AEW's demand right now is for three weekly television shows plus a monthly pay-per-view.
When you think about AEW, I mean, of course, the face is MJF, and he has never really shied away from saying that there will be a bidding war in 2024. If you had to guess, I mean, at this point, and I know we're still a couple of months away from it, but could you see a scenario where he honestly would leave AEW and go to WWE?
Well, I mean, could I see a scenario? Sure. I mean, do I think it's likely? No. I think that MJF, more than anybody who's established themselves in AEW, has done a really good job of making himself valuable to that company, both from a performer standpoint, name recognition standpoint. That's why they put the title on him. And I think that Tony Khan knows he's going to have to pay, to use Phil Brooks' words, a big bag to MJF in order to keep him around. And MJF positioning himself as saying, hey, I'm open to WWE, only smart negotiating strategy. I think the MJF though wants to stay in AEW, and I think he will stay in AEW. But he's definitely going to take a phone call. And don't forget, one of his best friends in the wrestling business is Cody Rhodes. And Cody Rhodes has gone over to WWE, done pretty good for himself. So there's going to be a conversation had. I feel, though, in my gut, if you ask me right now, on July 16th, he sticks with AEW for the long haul.
Brad Gilmore, one half of the Hall of Fame with Booker T, that can be heard Monday or Tuesday through Friday here on ESPN Radio, plus the voice of reality of wrestling, joining us here on the Bullpen. Sticking with MJF just for a second, Brad. I mean, one of the things that I think the fans have loved about MJF, certainly, I mean, he's one of my favorites, and the reason why I love him so much is just obviously his promo ability, the things he's, the emotions he's able to get from the crowd with the things he says. If he goes to WWE, I know it's not quite the PG product it was for a long time. They have gotten a little bit edgier. But if you take MJF, this version of MJF, and try to fit him in, you know, square peg in a round hole into WWE's presentation, do you think we'll still get the same MJF that people have come to love over these last couple of years?
No. No, because WWE is not going to stand for a representative of their company flicking off a 7-year-old kid at an autograph sign, right? Whereas MJF's character, he's established in AEW, the environment and the culture of the product over there, you have a little bit more leeway creatively with things like this. With MJF and WWE, they're going to say, we want you to do what you did to get over there. However, you're going to need to go within these parameters. And I don't think that MJF, from a creative standpoint, wants to do that at this stage in his career. Look at Chris Jericho on the flip side. There's a reason why Jericho stayed with AEW. I guarantee Jericho could call the office in Stamford, Connecticut, and get a similar deal, a comparable deal, or maybe even a better money deal at this point with WWE to close out his career. But he loved the creative freedom, and he loved the flexibility in the schedule. I think that it'd be the same with MJF. And I don't think that we could get the Maxwell Jacob Friedman that we love here in AEW in WWE. But I think the reason why people like you and I like him so much is because he really does feel like a throwback to what wrestling used to be. And he is very believable in his promos. And you want to hate the guy. He's very good at it. So I think that out of everybody that's come up through AEW, he's the shining star as far as brand new talent developed under that banner that's become. You know, he's the number one guy over there for a reason.
Brad, when... To shift gears to WWE just really quick, you know, we have conversations in wrestling circles and with friends that, you know, are big lovers of wrestling. And you see this story with the Bloodline, and it's just been one of the most incredible stories that we've seen. But I wanted to get your opinion here. Do you think that the Bloodline story has probably been the best written out story WWE has had since maybe Stone Cold and Vince, or are there a couple storylines that we're missing in between that time?
There's been other great storylines from, you know, I when you were talking, I was obviously thinking about Steve Austin and Vince and just the long-term play of that story. A lot of things pop up in the Attitude Era, but there's been some really solid stories told throughout. Nothing to the extent of the Bloodline. The one that comes to my mind is Chris Jericho and Shawn Michaels, their world title feud in 2009, I believe, when even Jericho, real life, punch Shawn Michaels' wife out, and there's so much emotion and drama over their ladder match for the world title. There's been things like that, but nothing to the extent of the Bloodline. I mean, this story has been, and I'm sure y'all have talked about it a lot, and we all have in every wrestling circle, just how incredible this story has been and how they've been able to squeeze that orange and squeeze the juice out of it over and over and over again. But we haven't gotten sick of it, and just the multifaceted layers of the character performances and how it's elevated everybody around them. Think about this. Not only has Roman Reigns established himself at a whole new plateau and is now marching toward all-time great status in this company and really in professional wrestling in general, the Usos are more important than they've ever been, both individually and collectively, main eventing WrestleMania this year. Sami Zayn had the run of his life with the Bloodline. Within that, Kevin Owens was built up, And now he and Sammy are running hot and heavy. Solo Sikoa was plucked out of NXT and now is a legit threat on the main roster, all from this one angle. It's in this story, man, when we talk about wrestling from here on out, this is the benchmark for great storytelling and how to keep fans engaged and tell a compelling tale week to week for months on end.
Yeah, I don't even know how to... I can't disagree with anything you said. The bloodline is, I mean, RJ and I have had this conversation, like, what's been your favorite story over these last, like, 10 years or so? The only ones I could come up that would be anywhere close to this is maybe Kofi Mania. Yeah. Becky's initial run when she got hot was really good, both of those being in 2019. But the bloodline has been one of the best stories ever.
It's definitely been an incredible storyline. Also, what I was thinking about, I mean, character-wise, with Roman, I mean... Could we say that this has been probably one of the more longer reigning kind of like guys on top? I mean, since Cena, because it seemed like that they were looking.
Well, he's got Brad, you may know this off the top of your head. He's right now what, the third longest run for a title run? I think
the longest in the modern era.
Yeah,
obviously.
Behind what, Bruno and Hogan, or I'm trying to remember who he's
behind. I think he's over Hogan. I think it's Bruno and. I think it's
Bob
Backlund.
Yeah, it might be Bob Backlund. Yeah.
Yeah.
Brad Gilmore joining us here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5. You can hear him with Booker T every Tuesday through Friday at 9 o'clock on the Hall of Fame. And, of course, is the voice of reality wrestling. Brad, thank you so much for joining us on this Sunday morning, getting up early and having some fun with the Macho Man music and talking wrestling with us.
Oh, just the cream of the crop, boy. With the cream of the crop.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Have me back anytime. Would love to do it.
Thanks. You can find him on Twitter at Brad Gilmore. Make sure you give him a follow there, and make sure you watch Reality Wrestling and tune into the Hall of Fame. Again, 4 days a week, Tuesday through Friday at 9 o'clock here on ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. The wrestling conversation is not stopping. Coming up next, we have my buddy, who I did 3 years of wrestling podcasts with. Shout out to the Heel Turn podcast, which was found on another station here in town until we both got fired when COVID hit. But my buddy Kyle King, you can find him on Twitter at Kyle King on Air. He's a morning show host out in Clarksville, Tennessee. He joins us next to talk more wrestling here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. You've chosen wisely.
I have chosen to test this station's destructive power on your home planet of Alderaan.
Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN, 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN Radio, 97.5, 92.5, that, of course, the theme music of L.A. Nights. This is the Bullpen, ESPN Radio, 97.5 and 92.5. Myself, Ryan McDonald, at SackByBMAC on Twitter, and my man RJ, at RHasNoJ on Twitter. Joined right now by another L.A. Night super fan. My man, Kyle King, you can find him on Twitter, at Kyle King on Air. He's the host, morning show host out in Clarksville, Tennessee. The Q108 is where you can find him there. Plus, he does a Twitch show, the Kyle King Show on Twitch is another fantastic show where you should listen to him and watch him at. And I told RJ before the show, Kyle and I did a wrestling podcast for about 3 years, the Heel Turn podcast. So he and I think, have talked about wrestling from about every angle possible. Kyle, how are you doing today?
Let me talk to you. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
let's start there. And there's some audio to go along with this, Josh. Kyle, LA Knight, he didn't have a match this last week on SmackDown a couple days ago, but he cut this promo you're about to hear, and I want to get your reaction to it afterwards.
You got to understand something. You can call me the megastar. Hell, if you want to, you can call me the GOAT. But sooner or later, one way or another, you will be calling me champ. Yeah? Because whose game is it? We're everybody saying. Yeah.
I mean, if the front office is listening to that, I mean, come on. LA Knight is so over. When is the push for LA Knight actually happening, Kyle?
I mean, I guess that's a question better left for Triple H than Kevin Nash these days. it's got to happen soon, but at the same time, who are you going to push him over right now? The main event, Jey Uso, is dominating SmackDown right now with the Bloodline Civil War. You've got Cody and Brock, which is a big, huge feud that gets a pop every time it happens. You've got Seth freaking Rollins over on Raw being the champion and doing what Seth Rollins does. Sami and Kevin Owens are as popular as ever. So it's like sometimes we as wrestling fans need to just sit there and realize all in due time. It will happen. If LA Knight is as over as we think he is, he'll still be over when it's time for him to shine.
I don't know whether or not there will be another great storyline such as the Bloodline, but the guy who's spearheading it, being Roman Reigns, you know, it's going to come eventually that he's going to take a break here and he's going to be away from the WWE being able to rest. My fear is with the WWE, I don't know who they're going to have that guy in which they build around after. Being the wrestling fan and aficionado that you are, do you think that you have an idea? I mean, is it Seth? Is it LA Knight who's kind of like that next face that they kind of build around? Like, this is our champ for the time being? Like, you know, kind of what are your thoughts on that?
I honestly don't know. I mean, other than main event Jey Uso taking the title off of Roman, I don't know, and that kind of excites me because one of the things that was really bad during, as D-Mac said, we used to do a podcast together for about 3 years. For about two of those years, it was just terrible creative, and it was predictable, and it was, okay, we know who's going to win here. We know who's going to be the champ. Here we go. I like the fact that, I don't know, like, what's going to go on with Finn Balor and Damian Priest? They're going to get their stuff together, and maybe Damian Priest branches out to SmackDown? Who knows?
Yeah.
I like the fact that I don't really know who that next top guy is going to be, and that's not to say that they don't have those. AJ Styles is there. Cody Rhodes is there. Seth Rollins. All of those guys could easily pick up for Roman Reigns when he wants to take that time off, but I think the way that they're doing it now with Triple H is they're just kind of waiting to see who's getting hot and who the fans actually want.
Kyle King joining us. You can find him on Twitter, at Kyle King on Air. He is a morning show host out in Tennessee, Q108. Kyle, going over to AEW, I'm sure you've heard the report that I guess they're going to ban some moves with AEW, including things like chair shots to the head, bleeding on purpose, spots in the crowd, some power driver moves, and this apparently is kind of the feeling of the inevitable that they're becoming a bigger company. They're going to be start traded at and viewed at a higher level, and I guess they want to become more corporate. And it kind of feels like the WWE alternative is now trying to be presented in a more WWE fashion. Clean or botch on this move from AEW to ban all these moves?
Look, I think it's clean because I think AEW, when they started off, they needed to appeal to the fans like you and I. That you guys were talking with Brad Gilmore just a while ago, and he was talking about how AEW is more geared to us, where we're like, this is how wrestling kind of used to be. But they're keeping that same spirit of, hey, we're still the alternative product, but that doesn't mean that we're not going to evolve and we're not going to grow with what's going on. I mean, you and I have sat there and watched so many pay-per-views and gone like, oh my God, the unnecessary headshot Cody took, you know, over at from Sean Spears. Like, do you want to see that week in and week out? No. I mean, now don't get me wrong. Jon Moxley looks at a wrestling ring, starts bleeding. That's gonna happen, you know. But you know, being safe with everything, I'm all right with that. I like seeing death-defying moves, I do, but I also don't like watching Kenny Omega land on his head from a Tiger Driver 91 and go, oh my God, is he going to be able to move?
Yeah, that is true as well. Staying with AEW just a little bit, I mean, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, and although he is looking rather old now, is CM Punk. What's kind of been your take on kind of this whole CM Punk saga since he's returned? It seemed like, you know, Mick Foley came out and said, you know, we all come back to wrestling at some point, when a lot of people thought that CM may never come back. And then he comes back, does the AEW thing, has that press conference where he says, I'm working with a bunch of kids, takes time off. Now he's back, but there's guys in the locker room that don't want to work with him. You think that this Saturday show is now really just to keep him away from everybody else. Of kind of what's been your thought on kind of this return of CM Punk?
Well, you know, B-Mac can attest for this. While I'm a huge CM Punk fan, I'm a realistic CM Punk fan. Like, I would never go on a weekly podcast and proclaim that CM Punk was coming back to the Great Balls of Fire pay-per-view. That's just not something I would
do.
That was
a
right,
reference
B-Mac?
For about three people, and I loved it. Thank you, Kyle.
Yeah. Hey, look, sometimes you just got to make references that
you
make
gotta
you happy.
You got to pop yourself, yeah.
That's right. Exactly. If you're not popping yourself, what are you in this business for, you know? But no, I love it. I think CM Punk is money. People are talking about him. And at the end of the day, you need people talking about your product as long as it's not like, hey, this guy might be brought up on murder charges or, oh, he's going to go away and be suspended because he drove drunk again. Like, they're talking about him because he got into a fight with a bunch of other wrestlers who are paid to fight. And he's kind of a jerk, which he has always said, hey, guys, I'm kind of a jerk. So CM Punk being kind of a jerk does not turn me off to being a CM Punk fan. I think he's good for wrestling. I watched Collision last night. It was okay. I think they're still finding their footing with that show. But ultimately, they're all working under the same umbrella. I do think that there's still the possibility that these guys are going to end up working an angle together, which would be fantastic. I'd love to see CM FTR taking on the Elite.
Kyle King joining us. You can find him on Twitter at Kyle King on Air. Going back to WWE for a second, Kyle, there was a report from PW Insider that Vince McMahon was backstage at SmackDown not last week, not this last Friday, but the week before. And their sources are saying that he didn't make any major changes to the plans. But what did change were things due to the opening Bloodline segment, the tribal court for Roman Reigns going long, and it caused a ripple effect where other segments had their time cut, and Vince McMahon was apparently involved in that. I don't know about you. This feels kind of like a slippery slope. I mean, no one wants Vince McMahon involved in the decision-making and making changes. We heard about the chaos that was happening before Triple H took over, where Vince was changing the entire show 30 minutes before air. I mean, what's your take on Vince McMahon being a little bit more involved? And are you sharing any of my panic that some of Triple H's control might be taken away?
I'm not too concerned that Triple H's control will be taken away, because I think that WWE is probably the best it's been, and I would say the last 10 years. I really would, because they have such a great storyline going on with the Civil War, and they have a bunch of great new talent coming up. I mean, we've talked about LA Knight. Look at Dominic Mysterio coming out of nowhere, being like the biggest heel in the entire company and getting the biggest heel pop for the entire company. Like, everything's going well under Triple H, and I think the suits upstairs acknowledge that. I think Vince is more in that role of, I hate to compare him to presidents or anything like that, but, you know, when one president leaves, he kind of calls the other surviving ones to look for information, because at one point in time, Vince McMahon was a creative genius. We can all agree on that, at least. He at least at one point was. So he might still have a good idea or two. He just kind of needs the Vince McMahon, Vince Russo filter. That's what he's been missing. Like, back in the day, when Russo used to come to him with 19 crazy ideas, and Vince would go, well, I kind of like the other, I kind of like this one. That's what Vince needs now. And if Vince wants to come in and maybe consult a little bit, fine. As long as he's not ripping up scripts, you know, 30 minutes before air, if he's just going like, hey, I would maybe expand the Bloodline storyline, seeing as it's the hottest thing going, I'm fine with that.
I mean, yeah, so you're saying Vince McMahon needs someone to stop him from putting Judy Bagwell on a pole or on a forklift? Is that what we need Triple H to prevent Vince McMahon from doing?
First of all, we don't need anybody to stop that. That is a gold mine. Still talking about it 20 years later, pal.
That's right.
Bro.
It's main
bro,
event anywhere in the
later,
country.
Bro.
Main event anywhere in the country. The voice of Kyle King on Air right there. You can find him on Twitter, like I said, Kyle King on Air. It has a Twitch show. You can find that. Make sure you give that a watch. Fantastic stuff there. And he can be heard mornings on Q108 and out in Clarksville, Tennessee. Kyle, thank you so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it. Thank you. And, hey, trade me A.J. Brown in our fantasy league, please.
Get out of here. All right, we got to get Kyle out of here, not only because he's offering ludicrous deals like that, but we also got to get to our next guest. Unfortunately, that'll be it for wrestling right now, although I have a feeling maybe in Mount Rushmore plus one, and maybe in our last segment of the show we'll get into a little more wrestling again. But coming up next, at Astros Future on Twitter, Jimmy Price. No one follows the Astros Farm League, their minor leagues, all their prospects, and that's obviously going to be a big topic of conversation coming up on the trade deadline when some of these guys could be on the move. Jimmy Price at Astros Future joins us next here on the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com, Tiger Friendly Radio.
About an hour ago, we had an incident where one of the employees stuck their arm through the cage and a tiger tore her arm off. I can give you your money back or I can give you a rain check.
The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Welcome back into the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. I am your host, Brian McDonald. You can be found on Twitter at SackByBMAC. Joining me, of course, RJ Saunders at RHasNoJ and our man Josh behind the glass at IMJChevy. The man joining us right now, Jimmy Price on Twitter at AstrosFuture. Once we were both kind of involved in a little bit of controversy back in, I guess it was 2016. The show I was working on at the time at another station had Alex Bregman on, and we got him to basically tell us when he was being called up. Well, the Astros caught wind of that and kept him down in the farm system for a little bit longer because they didn't like Bregman talking about that. And Jimmy and I had a few laughs about that through the Twitter DMs. Jimmy, thank you for joining us so much on the Bullpen.
Yeah, definitely. Appreciate y'all having me on.
Let's start right now with the most recent, I guess, with the Astros farm system and who's going to be added to that. That, of course, being what the Astros did in the MLB draft this last week. Interesting take here from Keith Law from The Athletic, called the Astros draft, quote, uninspiring, and said that the Astros first-round pick, Bryce Matthews, was drafted a full round ahead of his rankings. Is that a fair criticism? What do you make of those comments from Keith Law?
Well, I think the baseball draft is one of the hardest ones to try to have immediate reaction on anyways. But you know, if you look at it, the Astros second pick was going to be number 61. If Bryce Matthews was the guy that they fell in love with and they felt like he was the guy that they wanted, you either take him at 28 or maybe you don't get him at 61. So you could maybe argue they drafted him a little bit too soon, but they were able to save a little bit of money when they signed him, about $400,000 under slot to be able to sign a high school guy later. Like I said, I think baseball draft is very hard to make that immediate assumption. I mean, a lot of these guys aren't going to debut for 2, 3, 4, 5 years. So, just got to trust what Dana Brown and Chris Gross and the scouting team can do and the talent that they can add to the system.
When you look at this Astros farm system, just kind of overall as a whole, and we're the flagship of the Sugarland Space Cowboys here, but when you look at this farm system, how do you kind of assess it?
I think the system has a lot of talent. I feel like the Astros kind of, I don't know why, it's just maybe just the whole cheating scandal. I don't know, but it just feels like maybe some of their prospects don't get the notoriety that you see out of other teams get. You know, last year they drafted an outfielder, Ryan Clifford, in the 11th round. They ended up paying him like $1.2 million signing bonus. Very good prospect. He's in high A this year. He's got like 13 home runs, OPS over 900 at 19 years old, and he didn't make a top 100 list. But then you go look at some of the guys on the list, and there's a guy that Yankees prospects are always highly touted, and there's one that's in high A and he's 22 and he's got like an 800 OPS. And I know the tools are important, but I just feel like some of the guys the Astros have maybe just don't get the notoriety. But I do think there's a lot of talent. They're stacked at the outfield position. Drew Gilbert, first round pick last year, Jacob Melton, second round pick, Joey Loprofito's another guy that's having an awesome season with the home runs, the stolen bases, and defensive versatility. But I think there's a lot of talent that maybe just doesn't get noticed as much. But especially if you go even look at like last year's draft, they've added a lot of talent on the pitching side. And I do think the farm system is in a decent spot. It may not have the top 100 guys that make the headlines or whatever, but I do think there's a lot of talent in the system still.
Jimmy Price at Astros Future joining us here in the Bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Sticking with the name there, Jimmy, that you mentioned in that last answer, Drew Gilbert. Of course, the Astros' first-round pick last year out of Tennessee. Started really well in single-A earlier this season, was hitting .361, OPS over 1,100. But since his call-up to double-A, it slumped a little bit. Last I looked, which was just a couple days ago, was hitting .220 with an OPS under 700. I'll confess to not following his day-to-day stat lines super closely to see if there would be a reason why he would have slumped. But what do you make of Drew Gilbert's progress so far as a prospect in the Astros system?
Yeah, the year started great. I mean, he was killing in Nashville and was on top 100 list. He got promoted up to AA to Corpus Christi and did well there following the promotion. And then we found out he was dealing with some kind of nagging elbow injury. And it's something that the Astros allowed him to play through. He only DH'd. He didn't play in the field. So interesting decision to allow him to play. I mean, obviously, whatever it was, they didn't want him, I'm guessing, throwing the baseball or running around like that. But they were okay with him hitting. It kind of seemed like that affected his offensive numbers. The good thing is he's still walking. He's still cutting. The strikeouts aren't a big issue. I think just before at the midseason point, he had like 32 walks to 34 strikeouts in like almost 50 games in AA. So you could see the pitch recognition and the advancement that he has as a hitter. But it really feels like the elbow injury or the injury he was dealing with kind of zapped his power. He's only got 9 extra base hits so far in AA in like 48 games. But I think before that he was doing well. He like I said, he took the promotion to AA well and was hitting homers and was doing well until that injury came up, and unfortunately it's kind of slowed his progress. But the pitch recognition, the plate discipline, stuff like that's still there, so I'm not too worried about him.
We've seen guys like J.P. France, Brendan Bielak, Ronel Blanco. They've all, you know, made their transitions to the majors and to the show for the Houston Astros, especially with all of the injuries. But are there a couple of guys that maybe we don't have our eyes on that could, you know, maybe if not this year, but, you know, later on down the line for the Houston Astros could make immediate impacts like we're seeing, you know, those three guys that I mentioned prior for this Astros team?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's what the Astros do really well is they can find pitching prospects almost out of nowhere. But they got some guys down there right now that I think are going to be major league contributors. And the top one, he's in AAA right now, Houston kid, Spencer Arrighetti, has really good stuff. You know, started the year a little rough in April, but since April's been really good, just got promoted to AAA. I think he's had 2 outings in AAA, 2 or 3 outings. He's a guy that probably has a chance to debut at some point this year. But even if you move past that, they got a lefty in AA right now, Colton Gordon. They drafted back in 21. He lead the system in strikeouts to get 100 strikeouts in 79 innings. And then they have a lot of there's another guy, Rhett Coble, who's in AA. He's had some good numbers. They do well finding, like I said, finding pitching prospects maybe that don't have the best of stuff, or you know, the guys that are drafted in the first, second round and they end up being major league contributors. And like I said, if you go look at that draft last year, they drafted probably, I'd have to go look to be exact, but somewhere in the range of, you know, 5 to 6, 7 pitchers in the top 10 rounds, and all of them are doing really well so far this year. But yeah, I would say Spencer Arrighetti's probably the most likely this year, but then Colton Gordon's going to be the guy right behind him.
Jimmy Price from Astros Future joining us here in the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5. Obviously, it feels like in the MLB draft, you know, people always, I think a lot of Astros fans could tell you, oh, well, they picked whoever in the first round. Remember, Drew Gilbert last year, Bryce Matthews this year. That makes headlines. But a lot of times we see guys way after the first round make big moves. This is not like the NFL draft where the hit rate just is astronomical once you get past the first round, at least in my opinion. So, I mean, after Bryce Matthews, let's say after the third round or later, who are some sleepers on this from this Astros draft class do you think has potential to be a contributor for the team?
Yeah, I think Cam Fisher, the fourth-round pick. I know I'm going right after the third round, but Cam Fisher in the fourth round out of UNC Charlotte, big-time power, had like 30 homers in 64 games this year. Also walked 64 times, had some swing and miss issues, but he's a guy that I could see contributing, and they were able to get him in the fourth round, probably just through the fact that he was 22 years old and is going to sign a little bit for a little bit under slot, save some money. But moving past that, they drafted 4 high school players. They drafted the Chase Jaworski, the shortstop, in the 5th round, and then 2 outfielders in the 11th and 12th, and then another one in the 19th. But I think the 19th is almost like a backup plan. I don't think he's going to sign. Andrew Duncan's got a pretty strong commitment to Florida State. But Nomar Ochoa and Anthony Huiza, the outfielders they drafted in the 11th and 12th round, you know, the Astros haven't really had any of that high-level, super young talent. They've done well recently drafting high school guys, the college guys, but the high school guys have kind of fallen behind. If you go look at the Fayetteville roster right now, you can kind of see where it's lacking on some of that young-level talent. So I think getting some of those high school guys in the system that have a lot of potential, those are the ones that I'm really looking forward to seeing.
One more question for you, Jimmy. And again, you can find him on Twitter at Astros Future. Obviously, the trade deadline is coming up in a few weeks. And one of the topics of conversations that I've had around these studios and other places is just like, if the Astros want to be involved in some of these high level trades for the top players, obviously probably not Ohtani. I think that's probably a pipe dream. But for everyone below Ohtani, How many do the Astros have enough prospects to make multiple big time trades, or are we talking about one big piece and then maybe find a few big bullpen arms to help?
Yeah, I guess it depends on what you would consider a big piece. Like Lucas Giolito is a big name that's been out there, but he's a free agent at the end of the year. So despite him having a good year, his cost isn't going to be insanely high because he's only got 3 months left to control. So if the Astros wanted to get a starter like him or Michael Lorenzen, who's having a good season right now, they can get those guys probably, I don't want to say easily, but they have the prospects to attain a guy like that and then still go out and get relievers, just like we saw them do the last couple of years, 21 getting Kendall Graveman and, traded from the major league depth that they had, and right now we have Corey Jolts and Jake Myers and Chaz McCormick all doing well, but if the team's fully healthy and Yordan's back, one of those guys isn't really going to get to play. So maybe they trade from that depth, but I definitely think they have the pieces to go out and get a starter, get a good starter, and add to the bullpen if they need to.
Jimmy Price, you can find him on Twitter at Astros Future and on the Apollo Podcast Network. Jimmy, tell them quickly where, obviously they can find your work on Twitter, but tell them about some of the other things you're doing with the website and the podcast real quick.
Yeah, you can find me on the website, astrosfuture.com, minor league recast, but also we have a lot of interviews and things with players, highlights on players. I got one coming out tomorrow on Andrew Taylor, the second round pick last year out of Central Michigan. And then Kenny Van Dorn and I do the podcast. We usually try to record at least once every 2 weeks, maybe once every week, just depending on what's going on. And you can find that on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast.
All right. Thank you for joining us, Jimmy. Appreciate the time. And again, make sure you find his work on Twitter at Astros Future. Thanks for your time. We'll talk to you down the road.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, coming up on the bullpen, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5 with RJ Saunders and myself, Brian McDonald. We got to get into some NBA odds that I found, some interesting prop bets that will include Josh's Miami Heat and some, I would say, crazy words from Paul Pierce about the Miami Heat next season. We'll get into that and more, ESPN Radio 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, right where you belong.
That song belongs to me!